Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and welcome to another episode of Voices for Excellence in our Black Excellence series. I am Dr. Michael Connor, CEO and founder of the Agile Evolutionary Group, and of course, the proud host of VFE. And as we're celebrating Black Excellence during the month of February, today I brought on what exemplifies Black Excellence. Every time I see Ms. Paula Reed, I just got to shout, give her a hug, smile. Just most recently, we were on a panel together, and I found out maybe about a week before that Paula was on, and I remember saying to a partner, I was like, oh my God, Paula is on. Yes, I can't wait to see her. I was more happy to see Paula than to actually be on the actual panel because I love Paula so much. Miss Paula Reed, I would say there's probably about three people I know in the education ecosystem that knows everybody. And Paula Reed is one of them. She has just an illustrious career in education over 25 years. It spans over in higher education, K-12, pre-K services. She has been a steadfast in the business education ecosystem with supporting sales with startups, Fortune 500 companies. She has had every single position in the business education thread, from starting from account executive, outreach director, VP of sales and marketing, and chief strategy officer. Like I said, she knows everybody, and she is quote unquote the super connector. Started her business 7 years ago, where her business is just absolutely through the roof, biz education consulting. So I can speak on and on and on. I can take the duration of this podcast episode to highlight what Paula Reed has done for the education ecosystem. So without any further ado, Miss Paula Reed, welcome to Voices for Excellence and the Black Excellence Series. Yay! How are you?
Thank you, Michael. I'm humbled. Thank you so much. When you asked me to participate, I felt just genuine love because I've seen you out here on the circuit. You and I have done different things together. We have mutual friends, and I'm excited for your success and all that you're doing with your organization. And I'm very proud to be here today. And thank you so much for having me.
Thank you, Paula, for actually accepting the invitation. And, you know, what I try to do is bring a diversity of experts on Voices for Excellence, moreover, being intentional of the expertise in a variety of different threads within the education ecosystem. And I wanted to highlight your expertise around business education, around improvements of relationships between learning organizations and businesses, and also to highlight the work that you are underscoring across the country. Paula, this is just an honor to have you on VFB. But I want to start out with a fun question because, you know, you're one of the leading educational strategists in the EdTech vertical, in the business education vertical, in the pre-K through 12 continuum. But what song defines your leadership signature and excellence stance in the AC stage of education? And the AC stage of education is after COVID-19.
Wow. That's funny because you talk about song and I actually think about songs because it's sort of a journey over the past 5 years for me. When I started Biz Education Consulting, it was 7 years ago, and 2 years into it, COVID hit, right? So I started thinking about, I always talk to folks and say, what is your walk-up song? What do you want to hear when you walk up? And I started thinking like, it's more than just that walk-up song. It's sort of part of my journey. And where was I at COVID? So if you let me be this old school person for a moment, I can say it started out when COVID hit in March 2020. Actually, my last conference was the CASA conference in Sacramento, CAASA conference. And I was like, is this going to be 6 weeks or whatever it was going to be? And then we all went home and got dismissed from life. And I was an independent consultant. By that Monday, I was getting your contract's canceled. And I knew that was going to happen. So at this point, I was in the point of survival. So I thought back and said, Gloria Gaynor, I Will Survive. I kept thinking, I'm going to survive. And I kept my feelers out. I sat on every conference call, learning more and more about what school districts were doing, how they're experiencing this moment, the mental health and fitness for everybody, and things like that. And it was strange. About 6 months in, I got a phone call from a former client and a company I'm on the board with, and their CEO called me and said, "Hey, Paula, we believe that we can assist people, school districts moving forward when they come back to the classroom. I want to brainstorm with you on what we can do to be able to get our message out." And at that point, it was like my first entree back into the workspace. And then all of a sudden, I said, "You know what? I'm blessed." So, Jill Scott, I'm blessed. You know, I said, I'm really happy that someone looked and remembered me and said, "Hey, Paula, I want to work with you. Let's do this." And then things started falling into place, and I started getting more and more contracts back. And somewhere in this shift over the past 5 years, I don't know if it's because I let my hair go gray or what. It's like that time when you go from hey guy to hello mister and sir, and all of that is the same for me for ma'am. I look at it like all of a sudden people started calling me and telling me, you're a legend in this space, or you're an OG. And I was kind of like, when did this happen over this time? But I mean, I took it, and I really appreciated it. So then I said, wow, I'm all of a sudden getting some respect that, a lot of times in our world, we don't, at least in mine, I've suffered from imposter syndrome, even though I know I was qualified and I had experience, and sometimes more experience than 90% of the other people in the room. But you get to that point where, am I good enough? Am I it? So all of a sudden, I started feeling like I was getting respect. So there you go. That Aretha. Okay. Aretha. And during these 7 years, I took, a couple of stints where I actually worked for organizations. And, they sounded like really cool, orgs to work for. So I tried to build my repertoire of experience and things like that. And then last May, I said, you know what, I'm going to go totally 100% on my own, and go back into consulting again. And then I started realizing I'm doing what I want to do every day, helping people as I want to. I'm making connections, make a meaning. I'm thinking of kids on a regular basis, and not all the bureaucratic kind of things that go into play, office politics, etc. So I felt like my last one is this. Where am I today? Control. Janet Jackson. I have control over my career in a way that I've never had it before. So I'm happy, and that's sort of my space right now.
So to my audience, you just witnessed the innovation mindset that Paula underscores. Paula, this is the first time in BFE history where we actually had someone outline their answer and this level of pathology using the songs, but it's a coordinated story. Okay. I mean, this is like Kendrick Lamar's Super Bowl halftime show where he's telling the story, right? Dude. But to my audience, yes, right? From COVID, I will survive. And we were all in survival mode during that time. I call that, Paula, the DC stage of education during COVID-19, where it was this high level of novelty of what we didn't know and how we were able to balance science and trying to ensure that we have a service delivery model for kids. And Paula, truthfully, during that time, every answer that you provided, 50% loved it and 50% didn't. So you couldn't win in that environment. But as we went through that trajectory, right, I always used to say, yes, this is a time where we don't want to look at it from a deficit mindset, but an asset mindset on how we can elevate creativity and innovation within the model and not compromise the service delivery or the services that we're providing to our students and making sure they're safe during the pandemic. I'm blessed, right? We were blessed to be able to an asset mindset, but moving on, Paula started feeling a lot of respect and that control within that. Wow. I can actually say, you know what, during that same trajectory that you outlined, most leaders or anybody within the education system, ecosystem, follow that lineage of I will survive, move to I'm blessed, to respect, to now feeling like there's that level of control. And yes, you are one of the mainstays. You are a legend in the field, Paula. Don't ever doubt that. But like I said, a legend, but and considered a trusted expert and advisor in the ecosystem. You've worked significantly to close the gap between the pre-K-12 vertical and the business education vertical, right? To me, now in the AC stage of education, Paula, that's a necessity because we have to be able to accelerate what I'm calling this digital learning strategy or fusion strategy so that now we can elicit these 22nd century education model tenets for Generation Alpha, Generation Beta. But what inspired you to underscore this essential role in the education ecosystem as you're trying to bring these once siloed verticals to now work in this interface context?
Well, as even my company is biz education, that was the first thought about what I wanted to do. And I can take it back to me even stepping into the consultancy world. I was called up by two prominent superintendents in the urban education space. These are on the superintendent education side. And they pulled me by my coattails and said, "Meet us, in the lobby of this hotel. We have a conversation." And they saw in me something I didn't see in myself, to be honest with you. And they said, "Paula, you need to step away from your job where you are. You have done a lot for the organizations that you've worked with along the way. You should start thinking about consulting because you know what? There are a lot of companies out here that need the knowledge that you have." And mind you, I was in this space when there were few folks that look like you and me, Michael. I'm being honest.
Absolutely, Paula. Yes, please be honest.
Yeah. And
You are a trailblazer, Paula. I apologize to interject, but to my audience, Paula Reed has been doing this for a very long time. So when we talk about disrupting the ecosystem, one, as an African American, two, as an African American woman, where representation is still minimal. So, Paula, you're a trailblazer for a lot of people in a lot of ways, especially me, Paula, because I remember when I made this transition, you were one of the first individuals I talked to or spoke with 3 years ago. So, Paula, thank you for everything that you're doing for us in this ecosystem and in this vertical specifically.
appreciate it. But I look at it that in this space, as there were so few, one thing that I kept getting tripped up in is people kept calling me urban, urban, urban. And I have to say that I have as many rural, suburban, and superintendent friends across the country, no matter who they are and what districts they are. I'm all about the kids. I do have a special place in my heart to help those that are underserved. And I know that a lot of them look like me. And so therefore I'm passionate about that and honest and unapologetic about that. But these two superintendents approached me and said, "You know what? There are a lot of companies that don't know how to come to us and how to align their services to what we are seeking. And therefore, Paula, I think you should go out on your own and start building your own network and making these connections." It was so strange to me that it was almost like these birdies came down or these angels came down from heaven and told me, put it in their mind to have me sit down with them. And I felt so good about the fact that these are folks on the other side of the aisle thinking that I can give something and move something forward from the business side to bring everybody together. Then when I went out on my own, I started seeing the plethora of products and services that are out here that are not getting into the hands of students and teachers or administrators to help them be successful. And I always say, when people talk about products and services, I said, if you can't help with time, effort or money for a school district, you know, your product isn't worth the dime, you know, worth the dime. So I'm thinking all the time from a marketing standpoint, if you can't prove all of that, then you will not be successful in this business. So I thought, how can I help folks be able to articulate what their product or services can do in those three roles for school districts? And that is where I kind of, it's sort of my guide. And when I work with these companies and all of that, I think in terms like that, and they come to me and ask, you know, like, how do I present myself? You know, a lot of people have these nice tech services and products, but don't know how to fit them together. So I look at it as, how do I work with strategic plans? And the benefit of school district leaders and their students and what products and services are out here that are in alignment that can help and support, you know, both people on each end and bring them together. And you know, that's my goal. That's my North Star, to be able to bring these people together and connect folks who need the services and seeking the services and those people that have these amazing services available.
Yeah. Yeah. And Paula, thank you for that answer, because I really love your response when you talk about products and services and how the software solutions, these new emerging technologies, need to improve on time, efficiency, and money. When I think about that, right, and when you brought up time, efficiency, and money, when I go back to reminiscing at the early stages of when I was designing my platform with my software engineers and psychometrician and data analysts, I say that we have to be able to capture the artificial intelligence and the analytics together to ensure that A, we want to be able to look at the efficiency of time within the 22nd century model. We want to be able to look at systems efficiencies, but moreover, what are the strategic resources that we can be able to have districts or executive leaders repurpose within their organization in a forecast and predictive context within my platform as well. Really love that. And also too, the integration, right? You highlighted the importance of the solutions to be in alignment and integrated seamlessly into the strategic operating plans or continuous improvement, district improvement plans or continuous improvement plans of these learning organizations. Because again, Paul, I want to extend on your knowledge is that yes, that is digital learning strategy, digital renaissance, creating a digital culture simultaneously in this triangulated manner. Paula, you brought a point up, that integration piece and then the development of the product, service, and solutions. I want to extend on that response. Paula, most of our students now, on a statistical measure, 57% of our students are Black and brown. We have to ensure that there's these rudiments of or elements of being culturally responsive or developing culturally responsive solutions in alignment to the student demographics or the percentage student demographics in education, 57%. What advice do you have for these startups or for these solution providers to now, I like to say, exploit and explore their product to integrate seamlessly culturally responsive elements and tenets?
Who's at your table?
Oh, go ahead, Paul. Go ahead. Listen. The name of my book: Intentional, Bold, and Unapologetic. Please be unapologetic with this answer.
One thing I got during COVID, also, just so happens to have been the, you know, a significant shift in our culture was the George Floyd situation, his murder. And we have folks that said, whoa, wow, I should have Black people on my staff. And I got phone calls after phone calls. Paula, do you know any Black people in this business? I'm looking for, this is my favorite, unapologetically, I'm telling the truth here.
Please do, Paula, please do.
Paula, do you know any Black people with 5 years experience in the ed tech marketplace that has sales experience and at the director level? I said, No. What do you mean? And this is I'm being facetious here. Yes,
Yes,
there are.
of course, of course.
But you're going to sit here and call me because at this moment, not a movement, the moment that was happening at that time, they thought maybe we should have some Black people in our com at our company. So they would call me and they asked me these questions, and I said, what I do know are a lot of highly qualified, educated, experienced people in other maybe other verticals, but they can easily translate over into this education space if you would be open and willing to bring them on, like you bring other people on that don't have the experience and you train them up or whatever. I can definitely bring you over. I know a lot of people that were staying in their space and not willing to hop around just because someone thought all of a sudden, at this moment that we should possibly hire somebody of color to fulfill this checkbox. So when you say this, I kind of chuckle and I laugh because yeah, there was a lot of times where I was trying to help them as much as I can, but when it comes to me saying, are they at the table? When it comes to product development, are you seeking people that don't look like you? I don't care who they are, what it is. People hate this DEI now. I'm sorry. I'm all about it because those people at your table make your products and services all that better. And I've done audits on products before and looked and seen that, it's coming from a different perspective than mine. And I challenge people a lot of times to look at their product in terms of other people's eyes. Are people in your product team? Are people on your marketing team? How you market and how you voice what you're doing is really, really important. I hate when people bastardize some of the language. I've had people come to me and say, we believe our product is equitable, but we don't know how to define it. Interesting. So I will help, companies be able to define how this impacts the inequities in the education system. So I look at it as the fact that if you are an organization out here and you are not embracing all that others can bring to the table beside yourself, and you're not just hiring everybody who looks like you, and you plan on putting this in front of folks that know that 57% of the students are Black and Brown in this country, it's going to falter. People can smell the insincerity. I remember there was one woman who was an African American educator in the Northwest, and she says, I'm going to start decolonizing my vendor pool because I only want people who have the vested interest of my kids and here to grab a dollar, but are sincerely to help Black and Brown children. And she says, if they are not, then I need to find somebody who is. So this is out of the mouth of an educator who really, really not saying, if you're a business and you're a white CEO that you cannot work there, but you have to understand what her school looks like and the students that are there and the educators that are there and be able to have a conversation with them and be able to understand the issues and concerns that they have on a day-to-day basis. So always, always thinking about from the business side, how you can mend, mold either your product or services to once again align with who your product is being used by.
And Paula, thank you for that answer, right? Because in the AC stage of education, we have to be intentional with regards to designing products, creating instructional frameworks, leveraging systems from a pre-K-12 lens, that we have to be culturally responsive. It will be malfeasance if we don't have conversations about being culturally responsive, because the demographics of our student population are 57% nationally, where our students are Black and Brown. And then also too, Paul, I really love this because within the ecosphere, the various tenets, right, of the education ecosphere, when we look at this from the business aspect of it, we have to have those conversations within these companies, within product development and product design. To my audience out there too, we have to, too, if you're on that business education aspect alignment, and you are a company, whether it be an ed tech company, Fortune 500 company in the education field, you have to be able to challenge your software engineers, your UX designers, your psychometricians, your data analysts to not look at the exact model outputs based off of the data, but there will be rigidity within the model because, again, you're looking at it from a culturally responsive lens. The elements of when you build in those rules classifications of students that live in poverty, that students that are Black and Brown, students that are special education students, the various student groups that fall into our schools today, we have to align those models and expect a rigidity because that's where innovation, creativity, and experimentation will lead to all. Thank you for that, Paula, because I think that A, we need more representation on the back end design so that now the model outputs, right, will start being in alignment with our students. We still just the other day, Paul, I was speaking to somebody who was an educator and put in a prompt. And I believe it was Claude put in a prompt that was focused on Black History Month. And the response of the AI was they didn't have enough information on it. Okay. So now, when we think about when we design those large language models and put them through the myriad of testing and training stages of it, we have to again challenge our software engineers, as well as all the individuals that support the engineer, to ensure that these LLMs have full representation for the outputs for the front-end user. But Paul, we can talk about this for the whole podcast. But Paul, there are many misconceptions from each of these sectors that they have about each other. Again, you've achieved high success in both of these sectors as well, both of these sectors in a silo and interface context. But what are the strategies that must be underscored to close this knowledge gap between these historical domains, these historical verticals, to truly now create interdependency and make the work divergent in the AC stage of education, because we know the divergency and interdependency is required to meet all.
I think between sales, business folks, and companies and organizations developing these products in the education space, there needs to be a trust between the two. There needs to be care between the two. Needs to be communications where there's a feedback mechanism back and forth between products and services, excuse me, and the end user. Needs to be authenticity, of thought, authenticity of products and services, and the desire to be able to help students and educators become successful. And excuse me, right now, I think, or I see more of a shift, I will say, but historically we've been known as vendors. And that term to me is offensive somewhat because I personally see myself as a partner, right? And are all educators on board with that? Not always. Sometimes I hear people go, I don't look at you as a partner, you're a vendor. And we'll leave it as that. But that doesn't bring, a cohesive network of success, in my opinion. So I see that because historically folks have looked at it as sometimes that if you're in sales and you're a for-profit business, you're taking away public funds and you may be using them not in the way in which we think should be good. It is an illusion to believe that for-profit companies are bad and nonprofit organizations are good. And so they will seek out nonprofit organizations. I don't think profit or nonprofit are bad. I look at it as we all have the same goal to help kids if they're focused correctly. But I hope that educators, if they are in that mindset, will start to shift their mindset. because nonprofit folks are taking money also. They may turn it back in, but CEOs are getting paid. They're not working as a volunteer. So everybody's getting paid some way, somehow. But I think everybody is looking, trying to meet the needs of students and educators at this point in time, whether they're for-profit, nonprofit, or wherever they are in their space. And the more that educators start to embrace this and look at it as, we want to educate. My role is to do X, Y, and Z. It is not to be as creative as Michael Connor is with his organization. That is not your role as a teacher, as a principal, as a superintendent. I want to hire Michael as a consultant, as a business, as a service person to partner with me for success. So that's the way I look at it in those terms. From a business standpoint, what I think the misconception is, well, one is that there's tons of money out there and they should be able to churn their product within 90 days. And I know that's a lot of VC-backed pushing that they don't understand a lot of the K-12 business, and that it's for a long term. It's not like some of the other verticals out here that can churn in 90 days. Relationships matter, and that's really important. But the misconception also is that educators are not focused on new products and services. And I think that's false. I think that they are seeking such. They know the kids of today are different than the kids of 10, 20 years ago. Technology has gone way further than a lot of school districts are still doing things like they did back 100 plus years ago. So we've got to stay focused that technology has changed a lot. So we need to change and all of that. But at the same time, I'll tell you where this is coming from. I was on LinkedIn recently and read this blurb or whatever somebody put out there. He was saying he has a great product. People love this product. And he thought when he brought it to the product to the conference, he was getting great feedback from everybody about his product. And then he went to a reception and he saw his competitor there who he felt was less than his great product. But the people were having whining and dining, and therefore that's the only reason why they went with the other product. And I got very disturbed by that. Number one, you know, you're putting this out on social media and blasting the people who are going to be your customers or who you would want. But I don't know any educator that says, oh my gosh, I need to bring you in because you bought me, you know, Swedish meatballs and a glass of wine. That's just, it's not true. That is
Paula, can I interject, please? And I can't believe I'm saying this, right? Paula, for my agile platform, we launched officially in August of 2024 with our experimental group. We're actively recruiting, signing on for cohort one. And we haven't had one dinner with anybody.
See?
We can't afford it, Paula.
There you go. On a budget, on a stream. But you know why? Who's selling is your product is great. And you are great. And people like to work with people who are great, knowing that what they bring to the table is going to be fabulous. So, you know, that's to me an understanding that you need to build relationships and connections. And that's where that feedback loop is, because I know you listen, Michael. You listen to your clients and make your services better based on that client feedback. And if you don't have those relationships set up and that back and forth communication and listen and evolve, that takes time. And like I said, a reception is not going to do it. That's a misconception.
Yes. And to my audience, please play this answer back, Paula. We use this as an asynchronous tool for professional learning. And to my CEOs, startup founders, entrepreneurs, edupreneurs, Fortune 500 company, VPs, this is a textbook answer. And to my educators out there, And to my superintendents, my colleagues, my CAOs, deputy superintendents, please, I know that this is a huge mindset shift, but we want to move from calling these companies, organizations, vendors. They're truly our partners trying to partner with you in order to accelerate and advance your strategic priorities and objectives. And to my CEOs, founders, entrepreneurs, entrepreneurs, relationships matter. Out of that whole answer, that amazing answer that Paula captured for us, relationships matter. And Paula, I find it funny because, you know, I never try to compare myself with any other organizations or ed tech solutions, but I'm like, man, you know, we haven't done a dinner yet, we haven't done anything fancy yet, the budget doesn't call for that yet, you know, but we have, you're right, Paula, the intentionality of listening to all of the leaders within the experimental group, unpacking business problems and saying how we're going to partner through the platform to accelerate your priorities and your goals. Hey, my solution is, we're not finished. What can be improved, right? A critical friend, a critical feedback that leads to the iteration process of improving my product. So you're right, Paula, relationships does matter. But this past calendar year, right, you've seen many innovations and at a variety of different stages. This is kind of like a segue into that. You've seen pretty much every edtech solution, including knowing my product, the Agile Diagnostic and AI Platform, go through these iterative stages and design for prototype, closing the feedback loop, as you stated in your last answer. But Paula, we want to know, right? We want to know, what are the current education trends and innovative tools out there right now that are being underscored? What are those emergent technologies that are having that futuristic impact, so that now we could focus on these solutions or taking a look at these solutions for the 22nd century education model and 22nd century readiness and awareness focus?
There are a lot of products that are out here, but I will say, when talking to and or looking at profiles of graduates or blueprints or whatever each state wants to call their program planning for students. Number one, safety and security, right? That's a hot button. Special education supports, because the monies for special education could soon dry up in a lot of ways. And those educators that are in that sphere are screaming and hollering, like, help us, please. special ed needs are really high. Data collection for folks to make informed decision-making. Mental health. Once again, that rolls up in that safety security piece as well, helping for students and educators. Also, I've seen a lot of CTE products and services out here that are helping folks. And I will also say, anything that helps support teachers for retention and growth, administrators, and all of this, so that they can do their job better. I think that's really important. So those are just some of the things that I see folks looking at. What I would also like to see more of, although people call it SEL, I will not use that since it seems to be like a trigger word or trigger, you know, words, but they are essential skills that need to be had.
Yes. And Paul, I just want to just interject really fast because, you know, I unpacked, right? And I try to understand oppositional thinking, right? To really get deep to the understanding of why those beliefs are there. And, you know, I went through whether it was the Castle Wheel framework. I went through, you know, Dr. Brackett's work out of Yale University with SEL. A lot of the generalizations of the research around SEL, including specific targeted indicators in an SEL screener, i.e. the DESA. Paula, this is just an extension question. Why do those indicators create so much tension when they're just foundational skills of how to navigate life in an appropriate way? I mean, if you substitute SEL and say, we want to make sure we're creating reflective citizens that are aware of where they're at emotionally and how to be able to handle themselves emotionally in society, I don't see anything that is political or can create a tension about that. But why is that? That's where I'm experiencing cognitive dissonance, Paula.
Well, Michael, I think it's an outcry an extension of a lot of the letters, I call them. CRT is SEL. And it makes my mind blow off. Like, where did this all come into play? That caring, concern, love, resilience, all of this is not for all kids, you know? I think it got convoluted and mixed up in the culture wars. And so what I try to help businesses do is to say, your product is your product. It's doing what it's doing. Even if it's like a mental health kind of a service or SEL service, I said, you still have your product. It's how you market it now, because you've got to switch your wording to align with the stupidity, I will call it, and the ignorance around what SEL actually is. I don't even like calling them soft skills. They are essential skills to live in today's society. So many of our kids are down in their, you know, their cell phones or their computers, and they don't see the world around them. And I see also a lot of times, even with when people come with Ubers or Lyfts or whatever to pick me up or to have any kind of interaction, a lot of these youngsters do not know how to look people in the eyes, how to have conversations, how to maneuver in the world of the social world. And that still needs to be taught, and it needs to be taught double time, because we are competing against these devices that are removing them from human interaction. So I tell a lot of times people who have formerly used the term SEL as part of their product, services, offerings, or focus, or whatever, to use the term mental health and fitness. And I say, as soon as you start to change that language a little bit, people say, oh my gosh, yes, we have issues with mental health and everyone needs to have better fitness to their mental health. But if you say social emotional learning, oh no, no, no. So what I'm saying again, for products like that, just change your marketing language. It's the same product. Just shift your language.
Paula, I agree with you 100%. And I guess maybe I'm thinking about this in a very technical sense, that SEL, mental health, and fitness. Yes, I just don't get it. And one other essential skill, Paula, and my mother taught my son this, because she thinks that every kid in Generation Alpha and Generation Beta needs this skill. You're gonna laugh. How to write in cursive. So my mother taught my son how to write cursive. But anyways, Paula,
I am a family historian. I love genealogy, and I have to agree with your mother, because I pull up census reports, I pull up, and it's all in cursive. And these kids will not know what it is. So yeah, I agree. Roman numerals also, Roman numerals.
Yeah, my mother has, and I tell you, she was like, I taught you cursive. Now I'm going to teach Mikey cursive and Roman numerals. I'm like, you can have it. She was like, that's going to be a lost skill that every kid needs. I'm like, Ma, do you? And guess what? My son is writing in cursive. But Paula, this is a heartfelt question. I want you to be unapologetic about this, okay? Because you've had significant achievements spanning over 25 years, pre-K through 12 continuum, education, sales, and ed tech, right? And you being an African-American woman 25 years ago, setting the path for individuals like me, you know, you had to navigate. And I only can imagine the challenges that you had to navigate. But Paula, if I was a young Black or brown early entrepreneur, if even a mid-tier sales representative who has aspirations to reach your pinnacle, senior VP, as well as chief strategy officer, or many have you have guided, Paula, educators who want to make the transition to this technology domain of education. Paula, what advice would you give me, or what advice would you give them regarding effectively interfacing their business and education acumen in the space, and also how to navigate these verticals or this new vertical? When you stated at the outset, representation is marginalized.
Yeah. I have to flash back to flash forward. Number one, create a vision of where you want to be. And there's different pathways to get there. And it's important to be intentional about your pathways. And it's one of those things where like, people say, oh, I have an interview. They're interviewing me for a job. I'm like, no, you're also interviewing them for a job to see if they match where you want to go for your vision. I do vision boards a lot too. That's a whole, we'll have a whole session on that too, conversation, but it keeps me focused. And I do vision boards and then I take pictures of them and put them on my cell phone on purpose so that wherever I go, I see my vision board and I keep focused. But I look at it like this. I worked for a company. Let's put it this way. I was interviewed for a company, and this goes into where we are right now with qualifications and experience, et cetera. I had been in the game of sales and marketing, say at that particular time, I was in my early to mid 40s. And I was interviewing for a job that was a VP of sales. And I just remember the person who was the hiring manager came back to me and said, oh my gosh, Paula, you are qualified. You're so experienced. I really love you. I want to hire you for this role. But there was this guy that happens to work with my daughter. He is just graduated from college. And I think he has a master's or something like that. But I thought he was so good and he would be so qualified for this position too. And I'm looking at you and I'm looking at him. And now, mind you, we were not of equal. I had 20 years experience in the game, but he happened to be white. He happened to be a friend of her daughter. He happened to be someone she wanted to excel and she wanted him to grow. And she thought this position of a VP position would be fabulous for him. So she says, you know what? I'm going to split the job in half. So you get some of the territory and he gets some of the territory, but we'll both call you VPs. So he came on board. I came on board. And mind you, I absolutely love this guy, himself, but he was extremely green and he's been his trajectory for his business and life. He's amazing. But I look at myself and here I was experienced. We all got same pay. We all got everything, but I had 20 years more experience. And I say all that to say that I took that job because I knew that title would mean something on my resume when I was looking for other jobs. I had already been an account executive, a director, this, but now all of a sudden I'm getting a title of a VP. I needed that experience and I did not want to drop it. So my focus was not on dwelling on the fact that that was a weird hiring experience. My focus was, how am I going to get as much out of this job as I possibly can? Because when I do the next job, I'm going to spin off of that. So each time that I have gotten a job, it is to see what I also can get out of it from a growth perspective, all to lead toward my vision and where I want to be. It's okay to be the only one of color at an organization, but make sure you pave the path to pull in others. When I tell you, people ask me all the time, I mean, I am always helpful when folks call me up or get on LinkedIn, Paula, I'm looking for a job. Let me help you find one. I do it behind the scenes, calling up people going, you need a director, you need somebody. I know someone on the West Coast. You know, I put on LinkedIn. I know some people that are ready for jobs. If you do, you know, call me. I'm reach one, teach one. I'm always pulling people up. Use these things as lessons. One other thing I would say for folks who are in this space or want to be in this space, it's not about a sale. It's about a partnership and relationship. And the only way that you can do that is to hone your craft. I like to know everything about education, the state of education now, the history of education. I don't care what product you have. You have a conversation with people at a higher level. You need to be able to talk their talk, understand where they're coming from, what's going on, their issues, what their concerns are. If you're not out here getting on webinars, listening, learning, if you're not out here Google alerting what's happening in these districts, what's happening all over, if you're not reading articles, I read incessantly. I am on all kinds of ed chat talk, industry talk type of things. I speak at these engagements. I go to them because that's my professional development. The more I know, the better partner I am to school district leaders around the country. So I tell that to younger folks all the time. If you just only know your product and someone puts you in a rote sales training class, oh, do this, ask these questions, you will never be 100% successful in what you are. You might sell a product, widget, or whatever it might be. But if you really want to make an impact, if you really want to build relationships over time, and have connections with people or relationships with people, you have to understand their plight. And this is how, and that to me, that's how you do it.
Paula, the answer you provide is so profound. And to my audience, Paula, and you know, I like to surgically unpack answers on BFE. Paula provided 11 different strategies within that answer. Please go back. Asynchronously, I got that right, right? It's early. So please go back to that answer and just unpack that surgically and intentionally. She started out at the outset, vision, with vision boards, knowing where you need to go, kind of like that reverse engineering process and a growth perspective to your vision. I love that, Paula, because it is about relationships over time and that continuous learning. These are all key underpinnings within the AC stage of education. And to my audience, please play that answer back because again, I always say without a vision, you are directionless. Last question, Paula, on VFE. Now I'm gonna try to limit you to three words. I probably won't be successful with this, and I hope I am not successful in this because selfishly for my audience, I want them to have an expanded answer with the three words that you're going to provide, but take it as it is, as I tell everybody. What three words do you want today's audience to leave with regarding transformation and educational partnerships for Generation Alpha and Generation Beta in the AC stage of education?
First off, love what you do and love who you do it for. Okay. I wake up every day kind of excited about what I do. And to me, hopefully it comes through in my conversations, my meetings, and things that I do on a daily basis, who I connect with. If you love what you do, it helps with everything else. I've said this multiple times and I'll say it and reiterate it again. Relationships and relationships with everyone. Also in this space, I see a lot of people segregating themselves against other businesses. And Michael, like you talked earlier, we were at a conference together. Hey, and we molded and we chatted and we, you know, discussed all kinds of things. I don't look at you as my competition. I don't, you know, I want to know more about you. I want a relationship with you because now it leads to something like this, an amazing conversation today, right? Relationships matter. And I'm always willing to say, how can I help you be and do better? And I'm always looking at how you can do the same for me. And I appreciate it so much. So relationships is my second. And then I literally am going to end on this because it is my it is my reason for doing all of this. And this is kids, right? I could have gone out and done, you know, I could have sold light bulbs and I used to sell office supplies. None of that was rewarding to me, seriously. What has been rewarding for me is the fact that I get to make a difference with children, whether it is helping teachers do their job better so that they can be better educators for the kids, or if they're products and services that I can introduce to school districts across the country that help and benefit kids directly. And to see the impact that happens. I mean, I was in alternative education for years, and I just saw the school to prison pipeline blossom, and even more so today, that, you know, I felt like I was doing something and creating things and making sure that kids grow into successful citizens in our country. And so kids would be my third word. I added a little bit of stuff around it, but there you go.
And I can tell you this, Paula, every morning I always provide a leadership tip with a quote. And this month we're highlighting quotes from African Americans. And I can tell you this, I will be using one quote from you. And I love this quote, which was your first answer. Love what you do. Love who you do it for. That's a mic drop. That's just a mic drop right there. Love what you do. Love who you do it for, to my audience. And relationships, they do matter. Absolutely, they do matter. And who do we do it for? We do it for our kids. Miss Paula Reed, you lasted VFE. Thank you so much, Paula. Oh, man. Listen, I'm not going to lie to you. This is kind of like a fan moment for me. So thank you so much, Paula. But for my audience, if they want to get in contact with you, if they want to know more about your consultancy, how would they be able to get in touch with you?
Absolutely. I'm at Paula Reed, R-E-E-D, at BIZEDUCON.com, BizEducon.com for Biz Education Consulting, the first three letters of each one of those. So that's me. Or I can also, I answer my phone. I'm not one of those that don't. I'm at 404-353-3005. And yes, I will talk to you.
Yes, you will. Yes, you will. Biz Education Consulting. Oh, man, Miss Paula Reed, thank you so much for coming on VFE. I'm going to see you soon. I'm going to call you. I'm going to LinkedIn you. I'm going to do everything because, Paula, I tell you, every time I get around you, right, this is how I know you're authentic. You make me feel like I'm the only one. I know you generally care. And two, you are just available anytime and no matter what circumstance or situation, Paula, you've always been there. So thank you for everything that you're doing for the ecosystem, and thank you for everything that you're doing for me as well.
I appreciate you. Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks, Paula. And on that note, onward and upward, everybody. Have a great evening.